In this video, we're going to analyze the 2022 Quad Summit that took place in Tokyo, Japan. By the way, if you want to understand what is Quad, what are its objectives, and how it is important to India, I have made a separate video on it. In that, I have explained everything in detail with the help of graphics and maps. I'll put the link of that video on top right corner. Watch that video and you will have a good understanding of Quad. Before we start, I just want to make a small remark about Japan. Japanese people have a wonderful craftsmanship, and the amount of dedication and concentration they express towards their work is second to none. Alright then, let's begin. So as you may know, Quad means Quadrilateral Security Dialogue between India, United States, Australia and Japan. If you look at these four countries on the world map, it will form a quadrilateral, basically a closed, two-dimensional shape which has four straight sides. Now if you look at the main objective of this alliance, it is to secure the Indo-Pacific region from Chinese expansion policy. The idea behind this grouping was first proposed by Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in 2007. But the idea did not move ahead because Australia pulled out due to Chinese pressure. After 13 years, that is in 2020, India, US, Australia and Japan turned this idea into a reality and gave shape to the long-pending Quad coalition. So anyhow, the main objective of this alliance is to secure the Indo-Pacific region from Chinese expansion policy. Apart from that, these four countries will also do many important agreements and dealings with each other. But the primary objective of this alliance is to counter the Chinese expansion policy in this Indo-Pacific region. Because you see, there are many critical sea routes in the Indo-Pacific region. Even the Chinese are aware of it. And they have always tried to extend their influence in this region, which is part of their global expansion policy. So the objective of the Quad is to develop new strategies to keep the critical sea routes in the Indo-Pacific region free of any Chinese influence. And of course, if four big nations are part of it, then China also has something to say about it. China criticizes it and calls Quad as the Asian version of NATO. And if we look at it from China's perspective, somewhere they are right in saying that United States is trying to extend its influence in the Asian region. That is why you will see there is the Quad, US, India, Australia, Japan, and then there is AUKUS, Australia, UK, US, and then there is Five Eyes, US, UK, Australia, Canada and New Zealand. And all these alliances are composed of intelligence, security and bilateral military agreements. Plus, you also know that United States intelligence community is the largest in terms of organization. And then United States is also part of all these three alliances. So if you see, what China is saying is also true. If you look at the North American continent, from eastern side, America is extending its influence through NATO expansion. And from western side, towards the Asian region, America is extending its influence through Quad, AUKUS and Five Eyes. Plus, it is also a fact that the West has destroyed more democratically elected governments than it has created. In recent times, you have seen that in countries like Canada, Finland, New Zealand, Ukraine, who have left-leaning democratic governments that are led by relatively young narcissists, who are good at talking about how deeply they care about the masses while doing the exact opposite. So there is no doubt that United States has its own interests supporting these countries from behind. Similarly, if you look at China, even China has turned into a global expansionist. It views every regional or global strategic grouping as a challenge to its expansion program. Presently, China has the largest number of neighbors in the world, sharing its 22,000-kilometer land borders with 14 countries. China even shares borders in sea with countries that lie in and around the South China Sea, such as Japan, Philippines, Taiwan, Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, and Malaysia. Among these many neighbors, China has resolved territorial dispute with many of them. But still, it continues to have border disputes with countries like India, Bhutan, Japan, Taiwan, Vietnam, and few island disputes with countries that lie in and around the South China Sea. Now the question is, why does China have land disputes with so many countries? You can think of it as a tactic which China uses to negotiate on wider issues with its neighbors. It is very much part of arm-twisting diplomacy. But this kind of diplomacy can only be done by a strong country that does not care about international norms or what others think of them. After the 1978 Chinese economic reform, China has expanded its economy to such an extent that today China is one of the top economies of the world. However, with this economic growth mindset, China also tries to grow its physical size every now and then by getting into border disputes and uses it as a tactic to negotiate on wider issues with its neighboring countries. And China's economy is mostly export-driven. On top of it, China also has the largest navy in the world. And then everything that China has to export, it has to begin from the South China Sea. From South China Sea, if you go towards the western side, you have the Pacific Ocean. And if you go towards the eastern side, you have the Indian Ocean. So there are many critical sea routes in the Indo-Pacific region which are of great importance to China for its economy. You also need to understand another thing about China is that, apart from border disputes, China has another strategy that it uses which is called OFDI, meaning Outward Foreign Direct Investment. Presently, OFDI from China is around $133 billion, which makes China as the largest investor in the world. So what China does is, it invests heavily in developing countries, especially the ones that have geostrategic importance. And when those countries are unable to pay back, then what China does is, it dictates terms to establish control for securing China's maritime interests. And the Western countries call this strategy as debt trap diplomacy. So if you see, United States has so many military bases in the world, and it forms alliances with those countries to secure its interests. On the other side, if you look at China, it is not interested in forming alliances and commitments, it only makes economic and military agreements. So both the United States as well as China has their own respective ways of being an expansionist. Anyhow, as I said, the primary goal behind the formation of Quad is to counter China's maritime interests in the Indo-Pacific region. Now we will learn the highlights of this year's Quad meeting. In this 2022 summit, the four countries have jointly announced a new initiative called the Indo-Pacific Maritime Domain Awareness, IPMDA. By the name you can easily figure out, it means creating awareness, in other words, monitoring the Indo-Pacific region for any kind of illegal activity which includes illegal fishing, unwanted use of Coast Guard vessels, then use of maritime militia and many such illegal activities. And I don't need to tell you who they are pointing at. Obviously, they are talking about China. Because China has been accused many times of doing such kind of activity in the South China Sea region. I don't know how many of you know this, but China also has a maritime militia, which is officially called the People's Armed Forces Maritime Militia by the US Department of Defense. As you all know, China also has the world's largest navy, so this maritime militia is somewhat unofficial part of the Chinese Navy. It is said that China funds hundreds of civilian vessels, which are also under the observation of the Chinese Navy. So these civilian vessels, they go into the disputed waters because the Chinese Navy cannot go officially. It is obvious that United States is watching through remote sensing and satellite imagery. So these civilian vessels, which are also called commercial fishing fleets, they run like a mafia group, wherein they have certain areas under their control. If you have seen that movie, Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon, in that there was a scene where Bruce Lee had to go to an island near Hong Kong. And there was this one particular fishing vessel that took Bruce Lee to that island. So what I'm trying to say is that if you see that scene, you will realize that there are many fishermen groups who have control over different areas of South China Sea. And their primary job is to do fishing. However, according to the US intelligence, it is said that these fishermen groups are basically China's maritime militia. This is not something new, it is happening since 1950s. And the reason China uses these civilian vessels is because they have a degree of deniability. If something goes wrong, then China can easily say that these are poor fishermen who are doing business. One recent example you'll find is, Philippines had accused China's Coast Guard of blocking its supply vessels. If you look at the South China Sea, you will find many small islands. Apart from islands, you will also find something like coral reef, shoals, basically a sandbank that has shallow water, then atolls, and many such tiny island-looking features. If you want to know about all these geography terms, I have a video by the name Geography Terms. Watch that. In that, I've explained almost every geographical terms that exist. I'll put the link of that video on top right corner. So in the South China Sea, you will find many such tiny island-looking features. On these tiny land masses, China is building artificial islands with airstrips, sheltered ports, and other military infrastructure. And these civilian fishing boats, which are China's maritime militia, what they do is whenever they see any foreign military activity or surveillance, these fishing boats would intentionally crash their boat into the foreign boats for damaging their sonar devices or any other exploration equipment. Sometimes they even fire water cannons. So if these same activities are done by Chinese naval ships, then it will turn into an act of war. In order to avoid that, it is said that China funds these civilian fishing boats to do the job on their behalf, without getting into any major problem. If you see, having a maritime militia is a smart tactic that allows China to ignore international conventions governing international waters, like UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. So if you see these fishing vessels, they are Chinese proxies in the South China Sea, who help China to expand its influence into the disputed regions. So to counter China's maritime militia, Quad members have jointly announced a new initiative called Indo-Pacific Maritime Domain Awareness to help Indo-Pacific countries to monitor their waters, not only with respect to humanitarian and natural disasters, but also to combat illegal fishing done by Chinese maritime militia. Then Quad members have also decided to invest $50 billion in the next 5 years towards infrastructure projects in the Indo-Pacific region. And again, even this investment is also targeted towards counterbalancing China's influence in the region. Now, what kind of infrastructure projects are they talking about? The first thing that you have to understand is that this kind of investment is going to be both public as well as private. Please don't think that only the government is going to spend. Now, this kind of investment is going to be in the field of healthcare, critical technologies, infrastructure, climate change related programs and schemes. Although nothing specific has been revealed, hopefully when things progress, then probably we will come to know about the fine details as to where this $50 billion is going to be spent. Otherwise, a broader understanding is that most of these Indo-Pacific countries, since they lie on the equatorial region, so these countries are prone to many kind of infectious diseases. So probably money will be spent behind developing vaccines. And then equatorial region every year faces severe cyclones. We call them by tropical cyclone, hurricane, typhoon, and it causes massive damage to property, life, infrastructure, etc. So probably some money will also be invested in disaster mitigation programs. And then investment in critical technology means something like monitoring the whole Indo-Pacific region through satellite so that whenever there is any natural disaster or any illegal activity, these things can be monitored through satellite and actions can be taken in advance. So these are some broad areas where the Quad members could invest the $50 billion amount in the next 5 years. Now let me say something from the Indian context. If you really want to understand India's membership in Quad, it is something like this. So when you look at these four members of Quad, all of them follow democratic values in their social as well as political discourse. But India is a bit different. I'll tell you how. Along with democratic values, India also follows the idea of nationalism, which finds its existence deep-rooted in its culture. Since the Indian culture is the oldest culture surviving in this world, so the idea of nation always existed. It did not happen something after 1947, which many leftist historians and modern-day people propagate. There is a difference between a territory and a nation. A territory is a land boundary that we call state or a country, whereas a nation is an identity consisting of culture, community, people, custom, rituals, languages, etc. Without a nation, you can't create a state or a country, and without a state or a country, a nation can exist. That's what the Jewish people have taught us. Being persecuted, massacred, and faced mass expulsion for almost 2000 years, you will notice that their identity, culture, nationalism was always intact. Their homeland was created in 1948. But their identity, nationalism, culture was always intact among their people no matter where they went. Similarly, look at India. Having faced almost 1000 years of foreign invasion, but still the Indian culture was kept alive and passed on from one generation to another. Look at Mesopotamian civilization. Look at the Persian civilization. They had Cyrus the Great, Darius the Great. Look at Egyptian civilization. They had pharaohs. Now you will only see mummies and pyramids. That's it. Look at the Greek civilization, Alexander the Great, Plato, Socrates. Look at the Roman civilization, the Ottoman Empire. Even if you go further west to the South American continent, they had Inca civilization, Maya civilization, Aztec Empire, all gone. They all are done and dusted. So it is important to understand the difference between nation and state. Nation is the identity, and identity is strong when it is carried for thousands and thousands of years. And on the other hand, state is the territorial boundary. Now that you have understood the difference between a nation and a territory, if you look at the Quad members, India is the only country that has the oldest culture in the world. And of course, Japan is also there, but the oldest is India. And from there, the sense of nationalism is even more stronger in India. So India is a very unique country that is also practicing the modern day democracy, because back then there was no such word as democracy. Democracy is a new term coined by the West. It is some 100 years old. Otherwise, if you see these Western countries, not long ago, they were the one who created colonialism and slavery. Democracy is a new term that has been propagated by the West in the last 100 years or so. Otherwise, if you see India, Bharat, and more importantly Hindus, follow the concept of dharma, which means rightful duty of the soul, and it is eternal. So India is the only country in this Quad alliance which is not only practicing the modern democratic values, but it is also following the idea of nationalism, which is deep-rooted in its culture. Now, this idea of nationalism and dharma is something that the Western countries find difficult to grasp. Whenever they hear the word nationalism, the first thing that comes in their mind is Adolf Hitler. So that's how they are programmed. But anyhow, an average sensible Indian understands the difference. Yeah, so what happens is that today the term democracy is a left-leaning term in the political spectrum. And you will notice United States is the champion of democracy. I've already mentioned in my previous video that the Western version of democracy is a flawed model. In the name of democracy, they have done more harm than any good. So you will notice that United States always tries to pressurize India in taking the left-leaning international political decisions. The same thing United States and European Union countries tried to do when they were pressurizing India to vote against Russia in the UNSC meeting. But India took an independent decision and refused to vote against Russia. United States even said to India, "Which side of history do you want to be on?" And then if you remember, United States Deputy National Advisor Daleep Singh, he came to India in the first week of April. Even he made a comment where he said, "If China breaches LSE again, Russia will not come running to India's defense." As if United States will come to help India. Again in the middle of April, United States intelligence has claimed that there can be a large-scale war between India and Pakistan. If you want to know more about the relationship between United States and Pakistan, I have made a video where I have explained why United States left Afghanistan. In that video, I have explained in detail. And then United States Secretary Antony Blinken, he also made a comment that United States is monitoring human rights abuses in India, to which our Indian Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar gave a reply by saying even India is concerned about human rights violation in United States. As a matter of fact, couple of days ago, school fighting happened in Texas. And then United States and Japan did the same thing again in the Quad meeting. They both raised the topic of Russia. Obviously, three members of the Quad, that is United States, Japan and Australia, have voted against Russia. So it is quite obvious that United States and Japan's remarks about Russia was directed towards India. This is called nudging, gently trying to push by instigating and provocation. But as usual, Prime Minister Modi redirected the focus of Quad members back to development. So if you see all of this, you will realize that the Western countries are pressurizing India in taking the left-leaning international political decisions. In other words, follow the Western political system. And that is the reason the Western countries do not like India's nationalistic and dharmic approach. Because A, they don't understand, and B, they don't want such a large country like India to have national unity. Because any country that has national unity, and national unity can only be gained through culture and nationalism. And if you see, these elements are actually a threat to the Western political system. Why? Simply because if people are unified, then it is difficult to control them and push their political as well as economical agenda, which also includes consumerism, because in modern day, economic prosperity is something that every country is trying to gain. And how will Western countries prosper? Only if they sell things. And who will buy things? Obviously, a country with huge population. So you see, it's all interlinked. And that is what the Western political system do not want India to do. That is why you will see Western countries use India against China whenever they want to, and to control India they will use Pakistan. So India is doing the toughest act of balancing. On one hand, China is the main concern for India. That is why India needs the help of Western countries, and that is exactly what Quad alliances is meant for. At the same time, India is also aware of Western tactics and their double standards. Likewise, the opposite is also true. China and the Western countries are also aware of India's tactics. Just think about it for a minute. When the whole Western countries were sanctioning Russia, India kept neutral. In fact, India was buying oil from Russia at a discounted price. Obviously, the Western countries did not like this about India. And then in the Quad meeting, India is talking to United States and saying, "Come, let's discuss some strategy to counter China." And then if you see, Australia got their new Prime Minister. During his election campaign, you must have seen the picture where he was wearing a scarf that had Hindu Om symbol. So basically, if you see, the politics of Australia has shifted from Liberal National to Labour Party. Even the Labour Party of Australia is a left-leaning political party. So anyhow, my point is that now you will see that the new Prime Minister of Australia will try to make closer relations with India. And if you remember, on 9th February, the Australian Minister of Trade and Tourism, Dan Tehan, visited India. The main reason for his visit was to have a discussion and negotiation on a free trade agreement with India. Both the countries are also working on a comprehensive economic cooperation agreement. What you have to understand between India and Australia is that India imports more from Australia than it exports. In the financial year 2021, India exported goods to Australia worth $4 billion, while imported goods worth $8 billion. So India imports more from Australia than what it exports. And the goods that India imports from Australia includes coal, copper ores, gold, vegetables, wool, fruits and lentils. So naturally, a free trade agreement with India will benefit the Australian businesses, farmers, workers, and it will create new job opportunities in Australia. You also know that for Indian students, Australia is a premium destination for tourism as well as education. Free trade agreements are supposed to be a landmark deal for any country. It includes reduction as well as elimination of tariffs or any kind of import-export taxes. Now, because of that, foreign direct investment will increase. So there are many such benefits. I will list few of the benefits in this slide. Pause the video and have a look at it. So anyhow, the visit of Australian Trade Minister to India was basically to discuss free trade agreement with India, because Australia looks at India as world's largest and fastest developing economy. So this is where I personally think that the new Prime Minister of Australia is going to develop closer relation with India. And of course, not to forget, Australia also has to listen to what United States has to say. So probably the new government of Australia will also pursue the Indian government in following the left-leaning international political decisions. So India is doing the tough act of balancing. It is also talking to Russia, it is also talking to United States, and it is also doing business with China despite all the hostility. And if you see, this is what is the true definition of diplomacy. And only a true sovereign country can do this. And India is a true sovereign country, and that is why it is able to talk to everyone independently. And I will tell you how it is happening. Although I do not have any strategic answer, but at the same time, I will give you a convincing one. I don't know whether you know this or not, whenever any foreign delegation visits India, India in return gives them a souvenir, which you can also call returning gift. What does India give? It gives copies of Bhagavad Gita in their respective languages. The previous government used to give Taj Mahal, and the recent government is giving Bhagavad Gita. And Bhagavad Gita is a itihas, history. Now, if you have read Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter itself, you can see that Arjun is facing his own extended family members in the battlefield. And Lord Krishna tells Arjun that you have to fight with them because they are adharmi. So, I'm sure all these presidents and prime ministers who have received Bhagavad Gita in their respective languages, they have definitely read it. So, even that has a major compounding effect on the psyche and intellect of international leaders when they deal with India. So, anyhow, India is doing the tough act of balancing. And yeah, international relations is all about interests, and India is also looking for its own interests in the most sustainable way. But if you look at the West, they are constantly doing coercive diplomacy. So this is where I say that the Western political fraternity has now become the New Age communists. And I still see a lot of people don't understand this. Keep observing geopolitics with open mind, and you will understand what I'm trying to say. Anyhow, that was a quick analysis of the 2022 Quad Summit. I hope you found this video informative. Thank you for watching it.